Do you think that the dream of a chicken farmer is to, like, one day be awarded, like, given a sash that's like, best cock?
No. Because then it'd be a rooster farmer.
So you throw in the brain destroyer.
You're sitting there like a fucking baboon. I hate fucking whiskey, sir. I couldn't stop it fucking 3 or 4 hours, right? Wow.
I'm CM Punk and I wish we would stop genocide, you know?
Money blow, money blow. Oh, yeah, the clown. The only one of you buffoons who doesn't make me laugh. And as for you, I don't know you, but I'm sure you're a jerk.
Welcome to the show.
Winning time. Tapes.
I need to put something up on Friday. I'm not going to lie.
That's fair.
So I pulled up Battles of Figures of History. We're going to give our opinion on who'd win.
It's like Super Fight, Epic Rap Battles of History, except there's no content.
No. Why don't we start with... Okay, easy one. Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
Or Homer.
Simpson?
Woohoo! I hope.
No!
Okay, let's answer that one first. I think you'd have to say Homer Simpson.
What are we basing this on? Like, so this, to be clear, is not better person. This is more impactful?
Yeah.
This feels problematic.
By just not saying the guy who ended apartheid?
Yeah.
Does Nelson Mandela just go all the way because it's like, well, do you like apartheid?
Yeah, probably. I mean, okay, so if we're basing this off of Homer, the storyteller, mm-hmm. the Odyssey man.
Yeah.
Ulysses man.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty impactful in the context of how, you know, we perceive written word and unwritten word, as the case may be. Can I say it is more impactful than ending apartheid?
Some people say that Nelson Mandela was a criminal for decades.
I mean, he was in jail.
Yeah.
So, is that... I mean, I don't know. Run it back. What do you think?
On the one hand, it's like Homer is credited with, like, first, like, kind of mainstreamish original stories.
Yes, the first story ever told.
And he came, like, before Plato and Socrates, so he's, like, first Greek figure you really point to.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Nelson Mandela doesn't have any skeletons in his closet and ended apartheid.
Theoretically, yes.
So it's, like, I don't know, I feel like if I were to really think about it, if I also included the morality factor...
Yeah.
It's like the Buddha and then Mandela.
Yeah. No, that's fair. It's hard to beat. So, if we put Mandela above, that's, I think, a reasonable answer. But, speaking as someone who believes the kind of stories are the lifeblood of my life, it brings me pain.
Mm-hmm. Let's do a little lighter one here. Robert Downey Jr. or Bill Gates?
Well, that's fucking difficult. I have to say Bill Gates.
It's a rich white guy with glasses, or the guy who wants to play a rich white guy with glasses.
Okay, but there's more to them than being... So here's my thinking, right? Mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man, mm-hmm. and many other things. But let's focus on the Iron Manning of it all.
Okay.
I am Iron Man.
He played it well.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. But they also wrote it well. It takes two elements to make a good character in a movie, right?
Sure.
And I think that while that's really impactful and really important, being a good actor and shaping a franchise, sure, you can say that Iron Man was like the most successful beginning of Marvel, doesn't necessarily compete with building the PC.
Yeah.
Creating the thing that is going to shape the world for the next, I don't know how long.
Do you give Bill Gates that credit, or would you say that should be more Tim Berners-Lee, who's more associated with inventing the internet?
I mean, a little bit of both, right? Like, Tim Berners-Lee, in the context of inventing the internet, that's incredibly impactful. And if you put internet versus Gates...
Yeah.
Right? Which is also an interesting question. Is the man who invented the internet more impactful than the man that invented what you need to use it on? For the public eye.
Yeah. There's also the fact that, like, what we call computers has lasted, or has been around a lot longer than... Yeah. The internet.
Uh-huh.
Back to Robert. Yeah. Not only does he have... He's, like, the main face of the whole Avengers run, which culturally also, like, people were, like, are probably back then, like, Star Trek, where, like, you're following along every movie coming out, and, like, people were annoying to the point of talking about it.
Yeah.
But beyond that, he was also,
tragic victim of his own circumstance?
Charlie Chaplin,
oh.
Zodiac.
Okay, yeah, fair.
And now an Oscar winner.
Yeah, and good for him, honestly.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what takes more talent.
Mm-hmm.
I think the slight on Robert Downey Jr. is you could say that except for the him in Oppenheimer, he's a lot of times playing himself.
Yeah, he plays himself repeatedly. I think, if I'm recalling correctly, when we saw Oppenheimer, you didn't even recognize it was him.
Yeah,
for the vast majority of the movie, you didn't realize it was actually him.
Yeah, I didn't look at trailers, and I just knew he was in it, and for some reason, my mind just had a block on who it was. I recognized his face, but I just couldn't, like, go, oh, Iron Man.
Right, which I would argue is incredibly successful then.
Yeah, he won an Oscar for that.
It's right, like, yes, he won an Oscar for it, but also it's because it's one of the only roles in which he isn't playing himself, at least in the modern. So,
because if it can put us ahead again... The President of the United States needs to know about it. And if the Russians know about it already from a spy at Los Alamos, then we gotta get going.
There's no proof there was a spy at Los Alamos.
Robert.
Bill Gates or Downey Jr.? I think in terms of impact, I still have to give it to Gates.
Yeah, probably.
But Jr. puts up a fight.
And I think, like, I don't know, I don't put Robert Downey Jr. as, like, my top 10 actors ever. But I think Bill Gates, for some reason, feels like an especially good matchup for him.
Yeah.
But Bill Gates probably still wins.
I agree. I think that's fair.
Let's do Rachel Ray versus Miley Cyrus.
Ooh. Okay, this one's especially difficult for us specifically, because I have a very deep connection to Rachel Ray, and you love Miley Cyrus.
I love Kesha more than Miley Cyrus.
You do.
But Party in the USA is, like, the most...
It's a banger.
It's, yeah, and it's now, like, the most sampled guitar riff.
Right. So let's put it out there. Let's lay all the facts out. Miley Cyrus, one of the most impactful Disney starlets of the modern day. We're not going to count Justin Timberlake or Britney Spears.
Yeah.
But Hannah Montana to becoming a singer to having a breakdown... to really pushing through that breakdown in a fantastic set of music.
Yeah, and he was with Thor's brother for, like, having
Liam Hemsworth, yeah.
Yeah, Liam for, like, that little power couple.
Thor's brother.
What would you call him?
Liam.
Okay. I guess Thor's brother's Loki, technically.
Yes.
But yeah, I feel like having the little power couple narrative also, like, helps for... being in people's minds.
Sure. I mean, it went very poorly in the end, but that particular breakdown resulted in Flowers, which was a mega hit, so, eh. Mm. And now she's considered a, you know, immense mega star, so, right. Rachel Ray. I can't vouch for the historic context of Rachel Ray. I don't know if she was the first. Mm. I don't know if she was the biggest to do, you know, the thing that she did.
Yeah.
But, 2 points. One, from a personal standpoint, for me, as a child, anything that had conflict stressed me the fuck out on TV. And in Rachel Ray, she would put the dish in the oven and it would come out perfect every single time. I watched so much Rachel Ray as a kid. And I actually kind of make it a credo that I... when I am cooking dinner, it really should be a 30-minute meal.
Yeah.
I think about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's an immensely impactful chef into how home cooking is kind of done these days for people who watched it.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's... I don't know enough history about it to say it's more or less impactful than Miley.
I think even not thinking of history, to me, in terms of, like, TV-based women in cooking, it's just Julia Child that people would probably think of before.
Yeah.
But then again, as you pointed out, like, people probably point to Britney or Beyonce before you would say, like, oh, Miley's the best.
Sure, sure, sure. I mean, in fairness, depending on your Food Network saturation, right, you might think of, Paula Deen, unfortunately, before, let's not get into Paula Deen.
I mean, Paula Deen.
Well, I love butter, y'all.
So do I.
Keeps your skin moist.
Is like one of the characters of time.
She is. And I'm not going to lie, I loved watching her. Back before it turned out she was a problematic individual, so many things are.
Well, the thing was with, like, you know, Paula Deen and saying the N-word, it's always the people you most suspect.
It really is. But, okay, an obsession with cooking shows as a child sets you up for watching, like, people eat immense quantities of food on the internet now. I don't know what it was about the Paula Deen show that was just so enticing. I just wanted to watch her melt an entire stick of butter and pour it into a container and then eat it. Despite the fact that I'm so butter averse now in my own cooking.
Yeah.
Probably because of that. But, you know.
No one wants to become a somehow both inflated and deflated balloon at the same time.
Yeah. But we stand Bobby. Bobby Deen is cool. I think.
I don't know.
I think he's a good host for, like, the Holiday Baking Championship. Host. Bobby Deen. Okay. Miley Cyrus. Rachel Ray. Get Paula Deen out of here.
gosh. I might just say Miley still, just because I think music is more, like cooking is a fine art, you mm-hmm. know? But it seems like there's a lot more room for musicians to fulfill, like, a greatest people's list than the best chefs.
Yeah.
They both are good, you know, TV personalities, although Hannah Montana was, like, a more, like, acting-based show, whereas Rachel Ray is a host.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's probably where I lie, is just having the musical element shows a little more depth of talent as a human being than Rachel Ray, even though Rachel Ray might be better at cooking than Miley is at singing or acting.
Ooh, complicated. Don't know enough about it to say one way, but I'm okay to say that Miley takes this one for now, barring further research.
Yeah. Shut up, phone.
You're so popular.
No, I'm not. Next, we have Pythagoras versus Shaquille O'Neal.
Okay. Shaquille is the hypotenuse to the, I don't know, is calling him a sellout a problem?
Shaq?
Yeah.
The man who's done Gold Bond and The General and...
Good thing one car gives me full-size luxury and 36 miles per gallon, which is nice because I've got shoes that are bigger than most hybrids and more stylish, too. If you don't know the luxurious yet fuel-efficient LaCrosse, you don't know Buick.
And has his own soda line. And
let's not forget the gummies the size of your palm.
He's like if Krusty the Clown was a black basketball player.
Okay. So, I don't know too much about Pythagoras in the context of his accomplishments beyond his theorem.
Yeah. Right?
The Pythagorean theorem is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that he was a bit of a whack job, and I can tell you why if you'd like to know.
Yeah, sure. Again, it'll balance out the other whack job across the table.
Okay. So, Pythagoras had a series of loyal followers, right?
Yeah.
They really, really thought he was the coolest. And he had a lot of very strict rules that he followed for his day-to-day thing, both in terms of, like, what he did and didn't do, but mostly his diet, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the people who were in Pythagoras's little, not necessarily, cult is the wrong word, but...
His school.
School, that's the right word, were vegetarian.
Okay.
They had very specific rules about eating certain things on certain days. Vi Hart has an amazing video on this. Highly recommend anyone looking up more about Pythagoras. Watch Vi Hart's video on why he was a weird guy. It's got fun illustrations. Here's the fun thing, though.
Okay.
Pythagoras did not like beans.
Okay.
And one can assume there's a couple of reasons for this. Perhaps it's because he just didn't like the taste. Maybe he just didn't want a schoolhouse full of, I believe the term is flatulating mathematicians. You know, there's plenty of reasons why. Here's the real one.
Oh, okay.
He had this whole thing about beans are the next closest thing to humans. From extensive testing, Pythagoras theorized that beans and humans come from the same thing. You want to know what the test was?
Sure, go on.
He crushed a bean and it smelled like cum. So it was like, this must be humanoid.
Well, I'm picturing like on Inside the NBA where Shaq says beans are the closest thing to humans. And Chuck just being like, what the fuck?
What is wrong with you?
And he's like, well, I crush them in my hands and they smell like gum.
So he really didn't like them. And like forbade anyone from eating it. And I don't know if this is a myth or not, but when he died, he was being chased by this mob and actively ran into, apparently, a bean field, which he refused to cross because he determined it was better to be trampled by enemies than to trample on beans, and so they killed him. This, I don't know whether it's fully true or not. This is a myth to my understanding.
Yeah, let me look at death real quick.
Pythagoras is dead. Bean boy.
Pythagoras, you know, mathematician guy, obviously.
Yep.
But he also, like, did a bunch of earth stuff, too.
Sure.
He was a, you know, what the ancients call a polymath, where they did a bunch of shit. Shaq is kind of a polymath with the modern day. He played basketball at the highest level.
Uh-huh.
He acts.
He does.
He's, to some extent, a rapper.
An entrepreneur.
Yeah, definitely an entrepreneur. He's now, like, a... I think he's a chief somewhere in, like, mm-hmm. Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of like how we joke around about Snoop Dogg, like, filling out all the side quests of life.
Yeah.
Shaq is kind of on that trajectory.
Yeah.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Yeah, definitely... There are Pythagoras accounts of attack.
Mm-hmm.
A legend reported that Pythagoras almost managed to escape, but came to a fava bean field and refused to run through it.
Yep.
But, God.
That's so stupid. I mean, isn't it? You know what's even dumber?
Yeah.
He chose to run around the field.
Yeah.
And using his own theorem... You know this was a poor choice. Anyway.
That is very funny.
So.
Greek guys really wanted to, like, I mean, maybe that's part why we're talking about it now. They wanted their death to be, like, known.
Oh my god, yeah.
Like, there's a whole, I guess you can call it hyper-masculine way of thinking, where, like, really the most important thing you do is how you die.
Huh.
Where, like... Socrates was in jail, like, drinking poison as he's teaching.
Hemlock, yeah.
Archimedes was, you know, another Greek scientist who, like, was getting bombed by invaders, and as he was getting, arrested, he's like, do not disturb my circles.
My circles! Dude, Archimedes is crazy, and we could do an entire episode just talking about Archimedes.
Yeah, yeah, Archimedes is definitely a contender that I'm sure has an opponent somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I feel like he would just normally, like, even in the realm of science, just kind of crush most.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, oh, Newton passed him.
Mm-hmm.
And then because Leo painted, Leo also gets to pass him.
Yeah.
But then the rest, I don't know, you could say Archimedes is next.
No, I could go on about Archimedes, but we have other people to go through.
Like Aretha Franklin versus Charlie Chaplin.
Wait, did we choose whether Pythagoras or Shaq was more important?
Oh, more important? I think it's obviously Pythagoras, but more significant? Oh man, that's tough.
I mean, kids these days will know the name Shaq more than they will know that Pythagoras is not more than a word. Right? Any child these days that is going to learn about the theorem is like, isn't that just the word that comes before the word theorem?
Right. I think if you include the Earth stuff, like, I think he's credited with, like, the climate zones.
I'm sure. So, he's got a huge...
Yeah, let's look smart and give it to Pythagoras, but...
But we acknowledge Shaq's
breath. We know why Shaq is his opponent.
He's got your back.
Dude, the pain's no match. Aretha Franklin versus Charlie Chaplin.
Oof.
Maybe the best singer versus, like, the first, like, star director.
Okay, so give me some background.
For Chaplin, we got films such as City Lights and others. Silent films, comedy, one of the phases of comedy. Had the toothbrush mustache before it became known as the Hitler stash. Famously refused to do sound movies by the time it was invented.
That's cool.
Just keeping to the art of silent films. Whereas Franklin, not much known with the pen. Did a lot of covers, but you could counter that by, like, best to sing ever, possibly.
Yeah. Can I really quickly non sequitur for just a second? Because something you said reminded me of something cool. Spoilers here for part one of Wicked. Mute and pause if you do not want to hear. So.
And then resume when we're done talking, and then you get the spoiler.
Okay. There's a scene where the Wizard of Oz is behind a curtain bouncing the moon around.
Okay.
And the moon is this huge ball, and it is 100%, I haven't Googled to confirm, but I saw this and I'm like, oh my god, 100% pulled from The Dictator. And given the context of who the wizard becomes, absolutely clear connection there, 100% intentional. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, spoilers over. Came to mind because of the Hitler stash thing.
Right.
I don't know, I just had to clarify. Aretha Franklin, one of the best to ever freaking do it, or Charlie Chaplin. I want to say, and I hate to do this, I have to say Chaplin.
Okay.
In this context, because what I can give to Aretha is only what I know. And what I know is that she was a phenomenal singer and did kind of shape a lot of how, it's not even gospel, it's not jazz.
Soul. Yeah.
Sounds. Right? People have been trying to be her forever.
Yeah.
So, yes, she laid ground. Does that mean that she's more impactful to how history works than one of the first successful comedians of the screen?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I feel like...
It's probably not, and you're right. Especially as time goes on, it's much easier to consume Franklin's work. I don't know, I think there's a lot of people who would say, like, obviously Chaplin. I think it's a bit closer than that, because if we want to go in what is the best of the, like, black and white comedy era, I'd much rather watch, if we want to stick to just silent, Buster Keaton.
Okay.
I think early Laurel and Hardy.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then when you get into more sound, the Marx Brothers, I think all three of those examples... to me is better than Chaplin, but Chaplin's movies are way more artsy and, like, made to be seen at the Academy.
Yeah.
Which is a different style than just me as a viewer watching it.
Sure. So, tentative Chaplin?
Yeah, I'd say a soft Chaplin.
All right. Soft Chaplin.
new fragrance for women.
Chaplin. It would be called, like, Chaplin.
Kim Kardashian versus Woody Guthrie.
Excuse me. Pardon? A woman who got famous for essentially nothing.
Yeah.
And a man who worked himself to the bone to become a folk hero.
Yeah.
Now call me crazy.
It's an uphill battle for Woody, I know. Just like everything else was.
Okay. So let me give credit where it's due. I give the Kardashians a lot of shit, but I have seen a couple of things recently, and I have to acknowledge they're funny. They're funny people. And, like, intentionally funny. Yeah. Intentionally funny, intentionally good business sense, very good business sense. Mm. And, you know, starting with, I believe, a sex tape and becoming what they are now as what I can only describe as one of the first modern celebrities for the sake of celebrity.
Yeah.
Popular because they are popular. Mm. That takes work.
It's very capitalist.
It's very capitalist. And it is kind of the quintessential metaphor for capitalism in that context.
Yeah.
So a lot of credit there because that takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
That can't be easy. That said, I find it difficult to consider a tycoon of what we perceive to be modern capitalism to be more impactful than Woody Guthrie.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Kim Kardashian is also, like, for many years, you know, a role model for women in America. Just, like, this is how you be a woman in power. Mm. Not like Hillary Clinton. Just do the exact opposite of what Hillary Clinton does.
I should have used two different email accounts, and I've said that that was a mistake. I'm sorry. I've taken responsibility.
The American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Yeah, I guess her, like, talent is, again, the business sense part of it. Because otherwise it's, like, being born with it, which a lot of figures on this list were born with it. Like, Shaq was born that with the height.
Yeah, he was born with the tall. I mean, I don't know how much work Kim's had done, but she looks damn good. You give her credit. She looks damn good. And a quantity of it is probably natural.
And she has, again, a legion of fans, like, especially from, like, 08 to, like, 14.
Yeah.
Like, those 6 years, like, people were obsessed.
Sure.
With Kim.
Sure, sure. So with all that said, why do we pick Woody Guthrie?
Why pick Woody Guthrie?
Yes, because clearly we pick Woody Guthrie, but why?
He has a couple songs that will, like, are, like, evergreen that are just gonna be around forever. I think
this land is your
it's
land,
more rewarding to the human spirit to pick land, Woody Guthrie. Kind of speaks more to, like, being a human. Because Kim K is, like, again, like, our Cleopatra.
Sure.
We're, like, impossibly far away.
Yeah.
This land was made for you and me.
This Machine Kills Fascists was Woody's guitar.
Oh, yeah.
And that phrase is, or was written on Woody's guitar, to be clear. That phrase is so unbelievably impactful.
Yeah.
Right? Because it is everything that Woody stood for. A nonviolent way of removing fascism from his world, if at all possible, through music and folk songs and connection.
Yeah.
It is the quintessential meaning of that era.
Yeah, and I think not just for folk, but that bleeds into other genres, and that's, like, kind of, like, his legacy as a musical artist, where, like, you know, Green Day is very, like, anti-Trump.
Yeah, sure.
Rage Against the Machine is fascism politics.
Yep. Yeah, no, it lays groundwork, right? And his songs are timeless to the point where, when I was little, I didn't know someone wrote them.
Yeah, yeah, no, they're, like, songs, like, from that era in folks or blues, or sometimes even jokes from that far away, also feel like, oh, these are just kind of sayings we've
right.
had.
Right, these are impossibly far, these have always been, and then it's like, what do you mean it was less than a century ago?
Someone had to come up with
it. Someone had to come up with it. Also, I'm a little biased because I grew up listening to Arlo Guthrie, his son, and Arlo's music is absolutely hilarious. And so I listened to a lot of Woody Guthrie in the context of connection to my dad and my grandpa on my dad's side. But my kind of upbringing with Arlo Guthrie connected me through there.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend anyone who's interested listen to The Story of Reuben Clamzo by Arlo Guthrie. A phenomenally silly song and very long, so save yourself, like, I think 10 minutes.
Next is Wayne Gretzky versus Hans Christian Andersen. Are you familiar with both of them?
Gretzky is the hockey player?
Yes, he's the best hockey player of all time by a very large margin.
Right. And Anderson is the writer of fairy tales.
Yes, Mermaid, Princess and the Pea, and like many other ones that are as big as that.
Okay. That's a huge question.
Let me pull up actually a little more as you give some preliminary thoughts.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so I've not seen much of Gretzky. I know he is the best to ever be in the context of hockey, at least from what I've heard. I grew up reading fairy tales. So I've been handed the list, which appears to be things like The Emperor's New Clothes, The Little Mermaid, The Nightingale, which is, I read that one a lot, The Steadfast Tin Soldier, represented in Fantasia, The Red Shoes, The Princess and the Pea, The Snow Queen, which was, I believe, the story that turned into Frozen, The Ugly Duckling, The Little Match Girl, so sad, and Thumbelina.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the most famous. These have inspired ballets, plays, and, you know, a bunch of other stuff.
The question, I guess, for you is, do you think someone who is the best ever at a popular sport, like number one, beats those stories? Do you think sports is important enough in culture for humans that someone who's the best at it could beat these 100-plus old stories?
I'm really, really biased, and unfortunately, I think this particular question leans a lot into that bias.
Okay.
Because since I didn't grow up with any context of sports, but I did grow up with fairy tales, I view that kind of, like, being amazing at a sport, being the best to ever be at a sport, that's pretty dang cool, but it's a sport that I don't know much about.
Sure.
So I perceive it as kind of separate, mm-hmm. whereas I watched the Little Mermaid movie more times than I can count. As a child.
Yeah.
It was incredibly impactful to my growing up. And as I stated previously, stories are my lifeblood. So I personally find Hans Christian Andersen more impactful. But if you grew up in, I don't know, name a non-English speaking country.
Yeah.
Right. And you didn't grow up with the, you know, fairy tales, these specific fairy tales.
They can be translated.
They can be translated. And I maybe they were. They probably were. They definitely have been.
Mm.
Would it be as impactful as if you started watching hockey and got really, really obsessed with it and hockey becomes your life? Wayne Gretzky would take the cake.
Yeah. I think for me, who has more of appreciation for sports in general to humankind and Gretzky,
mm-hmm.
I think Hans Christian Andersen still wins because these particular stories, again, last forever, became movies. Maybe if they didn't become movies, it'd be closer. Mm-hmm. And because Gretzky is the best, he would take it. I think Gretzky would win against many other authors slightly beneath this caliber.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Hans, that's too many fairy tales where just him and the Brothers Grimm, like, take it over Gretzky.
Yeah. I do want to retcon a previous statement. I said name a non-English speaking country. Hans is from Denmark.
Yeah.
So... Okay, yes, from global reach, right? Let's put that into account. I feel like it goes to Hans.
Yeah, that's... I definitely see the argument for Wayne, but I think it's Hans.
I would love to hear an argument for Wayne from someone who is obsessed with hockey.
Yeah, well, here... I could do a couple of things. I'm not obsessed with hockey, but Wayne Gretzky... has 183 records in the sport of hockey. Say there's like maybe a little over 200 things you could be the best at in hockey. He's the best at 183 of them.
Man, that's got to be some kind of record.
Yeah, he has records for being like the youngest best at hockey and like the oldest best at hockey too. It's crazy. Yeah. Oof. He has like way more goals and assists leading to assists by a large margin compared to anyone else who's played the game. I think he has... It's either 7 MVPs in 4 championships or backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Played in an era where the second best player of hockey all time played in, like, kind of the second half of his career, a guy named Mario Lemieux. So he was not dodging, like, any other people who could have been the best.
Mm-hmm.
He's called the Great One.
I mean, clearly.
Yeah. I don't know much of his, like, philanthropy around hockey, like I could say for basketball players like LeBron or Bill Russell.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's nothing where, like, oh, and he also had, like, a 17-year-old date, like Kobe Bryant or something like that.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Yeah, no, that, oh, those are all good. Those are all really, really good points. I think I stand my case.
Yeah, I think it's valid to keep it, but again, an author who is slightly not below that caliber, I would go Gretzky.
I agree. I fully, yeah, I'm with you there. Like, if you'd done J.K. Rowling versus Wayne Gretzky,
mm-hmm.
And I say this with the knowledge that Rowling has established an empire.
Yeah.
I think I'd still choose Gretzky.
I don't know, if we want to open the Rowling book.
We can open the Rowling book, and I credit this to say I read all the Harry Potter books as a child, and I loved them. But we do not condone J.K. Rowling as a person.
Yeah. I understand, and I can't deny the people that love it, and people who even, like, go around their way to discredit Rowling as a human being to still like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And she invented a world, like, an almost George Lucas-like world.
Uh-huh.
I just don't think the books are written as, like, well, compared to a lot of these other greats.
Yeah.
I think the story is good. I just don't think it's, like, you could say this for a lot of things, but it feels like a lot of pull together from other stories as well as then just, like, but the setting is wizards, though.
Yeah. No, it is very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things about it draw you in very, very heavily. She establishes scene very well. She does very good work with tone. She has good character development and tends to not forget people. There were many, many reasons to enjoy the book series. You can also acknowledge that they're a young adult book series.
Yeah.
And they are not written like J.R.R. Tolkien.
Sure, right? Yeah.
And I grant Tolkien's multitudes of pages on trees get exhausting.
Yeah.
But regardless of all of that, Rowling established an empire. She created a world that people are obsessed with. Even though I don't condone who she is as a person nowadays, I do still love the books and I do still feel connected to Harry Potter. Would I say that that makes her more impressive than Wayne Gretzky? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, anyway, a little bonus round there. Does it surprise anyone that I used to be a Ravenclaw?
Alfred Hitchcock or Cesar Chavez?
I have not seen any movies by Alfred Hitchcock.
I haven't seen too many, but I've seen, you know, Psycho, and this one called The Man Who Knew Too Much, and then the other one he's really known for is Vertigo. I've seen Birds.
I know about these movies.
Yeah.
I have never seen them.
Okay.
But I can acknowledge in the context of modern understanding that Hitchcock is considered to be one of the most impactful directors, especially in the context of the thriller genre of all time.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yes, yeah, suspense. He was the first king of suspense.
Right, suspense thriller man. So, him versus whom?
Cesar Chavez.
Oh. Political rights and freedom activist.
Yes.
Okay. Lay it out.
So, Chavez, God, I'm going to sound real lacking of knowledge, but he created a union for, laborers on farmland in California.
Okay.
And they eventually did a march to Sacramento.
Okay.
I need to look up real quick just what the name of his union was.
Mm.
Yeah, Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee.
Okay.
And the United Farm Workers.
Mm-hmm.
Created these left-wing politics, and he became political ally with the Kennedys,
mm-hmm.
Because they are leftists, and he just wanted, you know, rights for people who either were born in low-class families or, like, immigrants that weren't born in America. And eventually, he got the California Agricultural Labor Relations Act of 75.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of typical, or I guess not typical, but activist versus a director, just two very different fields.
Yeah, no, completely separate. I feel as though giving the win to Hitchcock in this context is a very... Is there another word for white and small-minded choice?
I don't know. I feel like this whole website is designed on, like, do you want to feed or go out of your way to be against white, to, like, not support white, especially if you're a white person reading it.
Yeah. I mean, it's complex, right? Because I do want to say that from where I stand in my personal, you know, career and path line, it's neither of these have actually had too much of an impact on me directly because I haven't seen anything by Alfred Hitchcock beyond all of the pushes to parody from media. I've been very, very lucky in my employment.
Mm-hmm.
So this comes down to a choice of who do I think made the heavier impact on society. And I think Cesar Chavez actually has a really good case there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel unqualified to make this decision.
Cesar Chavez also had a couple of hunger strikes for waiting for lobbyists to see it his way, and also organized the Delano grape strike.
Oh, cool.
Where across the nation, people who, distributors of Delano's grapes were picketed and, like, businesses went down, and so that people would only buy grapes from companies that supported their immigrant workers and so on.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, I'd probably say still Chavez.
I think from a social standpoint.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance, even if I was born, or at least like a teenager or a young adult in the 60s, where I get to see both of them, I'd be more likely to be attached to Hitchcock's works, where they didn't have as much of a staying power for people born around 2000 and afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas you can kind of always appreciate what Chavez did.
Yeah.
There's like an advantage in these type of conversations for doing things for many people.
Right.
Whereas Hitchcock's movies don't do things really for people.
Yeah.
Outside of just providing another art.
They do. And an art they did provide. Let's not, you know, let's call a spade, but I think this one goes to Chavez.
Mm-hmm. William the Conqueror versus Frederick Douglass.
Okay, I'm gonna need some background.
Alright, William Conqueror, all you really need to know, first king of England, he's from Normandy, and then he, as a bunch of England kingdoms were like small, or Anglo-Saxon kingdoms were small fighting, he conquered them all and like became the first king of England.
Okay.
And all the royal family goes back to him.
Okay.
Frederick Douglass was an abolitionist who started as a slave, who then was able to, who became a self-taught man of how to write through, like, being friends with white kids and eventually becoming one of the, you know, a prolific writer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his materials about him as a former slave and just, you know, he was in the North, so he was able really to articulate through words how, like, slavery was bad and, like, really demeaning to, like, any human being.
Sure.
And he was also an incredible speaker and would give these speeches. And he's also known as the most photographed man of all time.
Really?
Yeah, there's more photographs of Frederick Douglass because it was a black intellectual, which in America wasn't really seen.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And I think it's really hard because I think Frederick Douglass could be pointed at for Americans like the first great, you know, black activist that could actually, like, do something to help them and had some sway in later that we'll see again with, like, again, the Martin Luther Kings, the John Lewis, and so on. Whereas the other guy conquered England in 1066 or whatever. So that we've had like 1,000 years of his family being like from that empire.
I mean, and in that context, we have an incredibly impactful, person in the context of monarchy versus a person who is incredibly impactful in the process of abolishing slavery.
Yeah, and just liberation.
And liberation in general. So this is complicated because as Americans, I think we have a different viewpoint. I think that in the context of the monarchy of England has done some impactful shit.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe nowadays they're more of a figurehead.
Sure.
But let's be clear, the quantity of...
No, until, like, even through the 70s of Elizabeth II.
Right.
They were fucking shit up.
Right, and they're, you know... William's bloodline did some serious crazy shit. For better and for worse. Much for worse in certain contexts. But not necessarily in the context of what we know as our world today, right? So, granting that, and granting that I think if we came from England, our perspective on this would be different. I think that what Douglas did shaped perceptions about slavery in America and really, really impacted the movement towards abolishing it because of what he was able to provide and because of what he was able to do.
Yeah.
So I'm very torn because part of me wants to be like, you know, I think that that's really impactful and really important and really crucial to our very, very short, diminutive history.
Yeah.
But then I also have to acknowledge a 1,000-year-old bloodline that has shaped a lot of the rest of the world.
I think I'm more comfortable giving it to Douglas here because we could... There's a case to be made, well, then you should only compare it to William, the first guy.
Right, which, him himself.
Which, again, he did maybe the most important thing of any of the kings, with the only argument being Henry VIII.
Sure. Murder all them wives.
Yeah. You sonless bitches. Where, with Frederick, I think even for non-blacks, he like proved the ability to look at the Constitution the way that racists will hold it up as like this great perfect thing. And again, point out the anti-slave language from it. And like, the framers didn't design this country to be one way forever, and like, you are supposed to adapt. And I think Frederick, from that perspective of being a slave, like, were able to convince enough white people to be like, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
And I think to be able to convince a large amount of white people when you're not white to do anything is a feat.
I agree. I fully agree.
So yeah, I think Frederick takes that one.
Okay. One more good one.
One more? All right. You have the website. You pick one out that you see that you would want to talk about.
All right. Freddie Mercury versus Frank Sinatra.
A classic one. A very rare one for this, where it's actually in the same field.
That's why I kind of felt like it's a good one to end on.
Sure. My not fun answer is I think it's actually easily Frank Sinatra. Because you can make the argument of like, oh, Freddie has way more vocal range.
Yes, I'd argue he's a better singer.
Right. But Frank as like a star, because he was in a shit ton of movies. And like, for the 50s and really early 60s was way more of an icon to me. Like, Freddie does get help with the, well, nowadays with the movie, but in the past by being, you know, the face of AIDS.
Oh my god. Okay, the face of more than just that, but yes.
But like, you know, that cause,
yeah,
you know.
Sure. The face of AIDS. Yeah, how dare you?
You're going to look at me and tell me I'm wrong?
You're not wrong, but damn. I'd like to think of him as the face of the man that sang Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. For me, it's both have songs, and neither of them have albums.
Yeah.
But Frank Sinatra was in an era before albums were really thought about.
Okay.
I don't know, there's not really a Queen album I'd sit down and listen to all the way through.
The best hits of Queen.
Yeah. Which, sure, you can make the argument that the best hits of Sinatra are more likely to all sound the same.
Yeah.
Which, I think any diversity in Queen's sound comes from Brian May's guitar work more so.
We've gushed about May before. We love May in this household. I'll put this out there.
Yeah.
I will listen to Queen more than I will listen to Sinatra on my own.
For me, it's about literally the same. And I'm just keeping in mind, I think he had more of a presence in American culture.
Yeah, and I don't argue that. I find Queen's music more intriguing and nuanced and complicated and difficult to sing. Freddie's range was like no other, right? And while we can certainly give Sinatra a lot of credit in the context of everything that he's done, I do want to point out that Freddie's vocal capacity was insane. That man could hit the highest highs like it was nothing.
Mm.
There's this clip of him warming up with an audience before a show and just kind of getting everyone into it. And it's this moment of connection where you see him doing his like, kind of things, and everyone's singing back to him.
Uh-huh.
And it's so exciting, and he ends it on this note. It's just high kind of sustained note, and the crowd erupts, and it's this beautiful piece of philosophy. I love that video. I think that Queen brought people together in a very, very important sense. I think that Freddie Mercury becomes a queer icon of history, one of the greatest, you know, iconographies for that in the music context. I think that he's brilliant, and I acknowledge the, I accept the loss if it comes to the fact that Frank Sinatra wins because he has a larger breadth.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it difficult to relinquish because I think he's so amazing.
Again, there are things that Mercury does that Sinatra can't do. But I think there's, it kind of also goes back the other way where Sinatra's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, I don't think really anyone could replicate.
A Merry Little Christmas. Didn't he also hate The Godfather?
Sinatra?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all right, we're going to go into this.
Yeah.
Yes, he was part of the Rat Pack, and he was part of, like, John Columbo's gang of people who initially did not want the movie to be made,
mm-hmm.
whereas Columbo was eventually convinced by Al Budde, the producer of the show, that this would be good for Italians because mm-hmm. it's about family and not about glorifying mobsters.
Famiglia.
Right. some Italian union men became okay with it, whereas Frank was still on the opposite gang and felt like this, because of the character in the book, Godfather, and Johnny Fonte, I think is his name,
mm-hmm.
the character in the book, that's like clearly supposed to be Sinatra,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, no, fuck the Godfather, I'm not like a underground prick, which, you know, kind of was.
Well, I can't choose my fans, especially ones that make up a story that insults Italians and a singer, world famous, who's a disgusting pervert and a faithless friend to criminals.
Johnny Fontaine is a fictional character.
You find me one book review in any language in the world that does not refer to the singer Johnny Fontaine as having been based on Frank Sinatra. Now get the fuck out of my sight before I have Jilly here smack some respect into you.
I will not be threatened by anyone, okay? Including you, Mr. Sinatra.
Oh, you want to cross me, you fat fucker?
And again, we got queer icon or kind of in the hand of the mafia. Along with, again, being in, like, being treated as a movie star, he also had the Christmas shit.
He did have the Christmas shit, which impacts you more than it does me,
mm-hmm.
but
I think that impacts, again, the globe.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's that. From a global standpoint, it probably impacts more.
Yeah.
I'm willing to concede the win to Sinatra.
Hey, yeah, we don't have to agree on every single one. That's just
my... I think I still keep it as Freddy for me, but I'm okay to disagree here.
I think one thing you mentioned with the crowds, I think that's like, an important factor of Queen shows and Freddy's draw as a star.
Uh-huh.
I do think it benefits from his prime being post 60s British invasion, whereas yeah. Frank's is before.
That is true. That is very true.
But, and another thing I like for Frank is that he had his prime run in the 40s and 50s, and then his best song, My Way, was in 69, which is after the Beatles are done.
And My Way is so good.
Mm-hmm.
My Way is such an amazing song, and when done correctly, it brings the rafters down.
Yeah.
Alright, fine. Fine.
Again, this is just, I'm just engaging a little debate.
A little friendly competition.
I don't think we're going to do this type of episode again, but hey, this website has a lot, and they could probably bring more interesting topic. So my favorite was obviously Pythagoras versus Shaq.
Oh my god.
It's such an interesting one on paper, and then the fact that you bring up this bean freak.
Bean freak. Nah, he's so funny. Watch the By Heart video. It's so worth it. It's so worth it. She essentially covers what I covered, but like, it just...
Oh, they're so cool. Later, bean freaks.